You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is Black Hollywood Live. Next, featuring intimate and in-depth interviews with Black Hollywood's next edition of stars and influencers. Black Hollywood Live. Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live, next.
Yeah. Why are y'all laughing?
It's just an inside joke. That's basically what happened right now.
Can I get on an inside joke?
No, it was just a nice drum kick. Nice drop. You had to be there. Air drums was in effect.
That's enough. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Black Hollywood Live. Next, I'm your host here, Nick Perdue, and I have the lovely, talented, hilarious...
Yeah, what's up? My name is Megan Thomas, and I am from the Bahamas. I got rap skills because I am Trio.
Oh, you should have said with the Amas.
Yeah, there's nothing else.
Clap the Yama, the Llama.
See, of course, our guest would know all about rapping because he's been around a lot of rappers. Who do we have today?
That's right, we have Omar Miller.
Omar Miller, give it up.
How you doing, man?
There it is. I'm good.
It's
I'm chilling.
Good to have you.
Trying to continue the rap set, but it was Megan Thomas from the Bahamas. How long did it take you to do that?
You know what? I came up with that in the ninth grade.
I figured that's what I wanted to know. And you know how you know? Because whenever someone's already come up with a rap, it includes their name.
You know,
my name is Megan Thomas.
That's messed up.
From the Bahamas.
You know that's what it is.
You know Yokohama's
on the story. Yes, I ride on Yokohama's.
This is what we're going to do. Steven, get us a beat so at the end of this interview, all of us are going to rap. Everybody got to throw a hot four.
I don't rap.
That's very simple. I don't rap.
Yeah, I don't rap.
So I'd rather work on Megan Thomas from the Bahamas.
You know what? Y'all some haters.
Watching out for piranhas.
There you go.
Hold on. Let me write that.
Right. Piranhas. Yeah, you got piranhas, as in Saurus Rex.
Got you.
Then you could flex the next. I'm telling you, we might want to stop the interview and just go press something on wax.
Yes, we need to flow at the end of this. All right.
There you go. So Omar's rapping skills, I believe, came from the mean streets of Los Angeles, right?
listening to lots of inappropriate music for years and years as an adolescent got me the ability to drop a very decent 12 or 16.
There you go. So what was it like growing up in L.A.?
Well, it was phenomenal. I mean, I was born in the late 70s, so I grew up throughout the 80s, and I got to see a lot of things change and went from living in Los Angeles to living in Orange County to back to living in Los Angeles. You get to see a lot. There was a very diverse landscape in California, especially in Southern California. And it's, it influences everything. It influences my work. It influences the way I talk, the way I drive.
What do you drive?
I rode over here on a motor scooter, actually. It was a Vespa. It was cold out. So I have chapped lips.
That works. So, yeah, it's very, very hipster of you.
That's what it is. That is from my time I spent near the beach.
There you go. Right.
Where are you from in L.A.?
I'm from Orange County. I lived in Orange County for the longest time. Went to Canyon High School in Anaheim Hills. We were the Comanches. It was lovely. and now I reside in this lovely San Gabriel Valley. So it was outstanding.
Definitely a Cali boy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Did you always know that you wanted to act?
No, God, no. I didn't want to have anything to do with it for the longest time. I never even thought of it as a viable profession in my mind. I thought about, performance. I was just like everybody else. You kind of think that somebody walks up to people in the mall and they're like, hey, man, you want to be in a movie? And you're like, yeah. Next thing you know, you're whipping a chain on an action movie or something. But, I ended up going to college. I went to go play sports. And then I stumbled into the theater and I found out that I loved it. And next thing I know, I was there. Wow. It kind of rolled into a much bigger career.
What kind of sports were you playing?
Baseball. I played baseball and basketball.
What was your position in baseball?
I pitched. Played first base.
Nice.
Anything, pretty much.
Very Mo Vaughn of you.
Everything but catcher. Anything but catcher.
Right.
Catcher wasn't my move.
So how has being, because you're 6'6", right?
Yeah.
Tall dude. Has that helped your career and how has it helped?
I don't know. It's just helped me in life. Being tall is a good thing. It's only bad when you try to fit into, small vehicles or clothes or something. But other than that, it's the Lord's done a lot of the work for me. I have a great presence, and a lot of it has to do with size. There's other factors, too. But sometimes it can come into play as a detriment because there's a lot of very, very compact actors in Hollywood.
Right.
Want to use that adjective. But there's a lot of, you know, a lot of men that are very small, like you. So, and then it just, you know, I remember they told me, the producers told me, actually, that I almost lost the gig in 8 Mile because they thought I was going to be too tall standing next to the rest of the guys.
Mm. Wow.
And so usually that's like the number one thing I get when people see me in person is, why are you so much taller in person? Or that I'm not ugly. I guess the camera does something very awkward to me.
It's terrible.
What can you do? It's worked out, though, so I can't really complain.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Now, you know, we've heard and we've seen this comparison to Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
Right.
And was so, that you that made the lie on Wikipedia that, about yeah, that no, I'm Forrest's nephew?
Because we were trying to figure that out. Like, why do people think that you're related to Forrest Whitaker?
I have no idea. The only people who don't believe that are me, Forrest, and our parents. I was going to do a movie with Forrest, and it was funny because he and I were the people there that were like, did not like look feel like we were looking at a mirror, and other people were like,
"Oh my god!"
Yeah, it's just,
okay. I think I can see the resemblance. I can kind of see it, but I don't know why people would just automatically assume that.
Yeah,
you know what? I stopped. It used to make me upset, but I stopped. I started to look at it a different way, and I've realized that people are very, very good at trying to make things simple. Mm. So what they want to do is they want to say, "You look like blah blah blah," and "You look like blah blah blah." Man, yeah. You could be a stunt double for blah, blah, blah. That's what people used to tell me all the time. Like, that was going to be a grand compliment. You know what you could do, man? You could get some stunt work for Forrest Whitaker. I was like, oh, good.
And all the stunts cool. that he does in his
you
movie.
You should ride. Right.
Exactly. You
know, all that running in vantage point. You That could have been you.
That could have been me.
That could have been you right there.
And the thing is that's cool, but it's just, I found that it's a way that people do. And a lot of times people, I still have yet to ask for if people do that to him at all. If people come up to him and say, man, you're great on CSI.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and I wonder because, only because I know how people, they simplify things. They, right. they try to say, because they know Forrest Whitaker because of his massive talent and his, you know, massive fame and the Oscar winner and the whole nine. I think that it's easier for them to just say, ah.
Yeah.
Instead of actually trying to find out.
You better ride those coattails. You're going to be like, oh, my uncle didn't put me in a movie.
You sound like the same person that's telling me about becoming a stuntman. I'm all right. My coattail is doing A-okay.
No,
your uncle's hating on you.
You know you guys should do it because you know his movie Black Nativity is coming out.
Yeah.
So you guys should walk the red carpet and be like, oh my god,
they're different people.
Yeah, and the people. Who knew? Like, oh yeah.
Now there's that. But actually, we're in competition with Forrest's movie, so I can't walk the red carpet.
You can't do the red carpet for that. Yeah, it's true.
Sucks.
It's all right.
But
it's like that sometimes.
Your uncle takes your shine every time.
Why did you perpetuate it? It's not funny. You're perpetuating it.
I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop.
A stereotype and a rumor,
know,
really.
Right.
We thought we were trying to extinguish.
Yeah, that was
the point.
He is not Forrest.
He's not.
Or related.
He's not related to Forrest Whitaker, everybody. Please stop saying that.
Starting with you.
Right. But you did do 3 hip-hop movies, right? And so you were in...
3?
Yeah,
I did do three.
See, you're an obstacle.
Yes,
with it kicked E-40 it off. Water.
Yeah, your player partner. I since the womb, me being a tycoon. Yeah, you know, I did, and that was the first thing that I ever did in my life. The very first audition I ever had or anything.
Wow.
I was in college, and I had this great professor who had, he was always open to me to take his courses.
Mm.
And whether it was a late ad or whether it was, the first one I took actually was a, general education drama 5 class, and he was the teacher.
Mm.
And he told me, he said, hey, man, I think you have something. I think you can, you know, you can make some noise in this thing. And I really, my head was so in a different space with athletics and everything, I didn't think about it at all.
Yeah.
Didn't even entertain the idea. And once I went back to him and I asked him, I said, hey, man, you know, it's funny. I was just in Jamaica, and Flex was there. Flex Alexander was there. One of the things that got me involved in acting was that I had a barbecue at my house when I was in college. And there was a bunch of people at the barbecue, and then when they left, there was this couple girls that were like, you should really look into acting. And I was like, yeah, cool. I'm washing dishes, everybody leaves. And I sat down, and Homeboys in Outer Space was on TV. And I got to tell Flex this story the other day. It made me so happy, because you never know who's watching.
Right.
And Homeboys in Outer Space was on, and I remember a light bulb went off. I was watching the show, and I was like, they're getting paid to do this. And I couldn't, it hadn't really registered to me.
Right.
That you may actually go to school to do something performance-related or, you know, fame-related
yeah.
because it's talent-related. And I went back to that professor and I said, hey man, is there anything that you, you know, any way you think I can get paid doing this acting thing? He said, actually, I got an audition to send you to right now for an independent film,
right.
But you have to agree to act in the theater for me next semester. And so I said, yeah, for sure. And the audition was for Obstacles, strangely enough. And so I went and did the audition and they hired me.
That's dope.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah, you for go. Young E-40.
And then you did 8 Mile with Eminem.
That right. was the whopper. That really changed things around.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
a big, really
what,
big moment.
What was it like being on set? Just, you know, because
awesome.
Like
awesome.
It seemed like it was like a very grimy type movie. So.
It was. And they had the right cast for it.
Yeah.
Because they had a bunch of grimy dudes, a bunch of young, grimy, hungry, witty, you know, really sharp people. There was a lot of very strong male personalities on that set.
Yeah.
And so really I wish it was like it is now where you can videotape things with your phone and, you know, your watch and all this different stuff because
right.
there was some legendary roasts that took place on the 8 Mile set.
Oh, wow.
Everybody could get it. I mean,
wow.
there was anybody that you can think of was made fun of to the point of tears at some point on that set. It was
even
great.
Even Kim Basinger?
Except for Kim, because they had something where Kim came for 3 weeks and shot her stuff, and they were like, don't look at her in the eyeballs or something like that, and she left. But we didn't have any stuff with her. Like, the crew, none of our stuff was
right.
related to hers. You know, she had I was almost like a different portion of the film with her
right.
and Marshall together.
Right.
So we didn't, except for her. But any of the guys in either of the crews, in the Free World or 3 1/3, it was raw.
So besides Eminem, who had the best, you know, like, rap skills?
I tell you, on the real, Mekhi Phifer was nice with the raps.
Wow,
if you
really?
Guys ever get, yeah, he has a great story about how he thought about being a rapper / crack dealer for about 13 hours and then had an experience and he got scared straight and he moved out of that and into something else that we see him on now. But
right.
Yeah, apparently he was serious about rapping for a while. So he had skills. There was a lot of dudes who could rap on that, man. There was a lot of talented people around that project.
Wow.
Right.
I remember when Brandon Jackson was an extra on the project, and he came and he was like, hey, man, we can work together one day, man. I was like, cool. This was like my first job. We can work together now. and now he's huge. You know, he blew up and things are going well. There's a lot of different talent that came out of that.
Yeah.
And then what are your rap skills looking like?
What's tardy. But, I mean, you know, they're a little delayed at this point. But if I needed to, my life depended on it, I could come up with something clever, I'm
okay.
sure.
Yeah, you know, because a lot of things rhyme with Miller.
There it is. Almost like Thomas and Bahamas.
Yeah, that's all you need.
You know, I mean, we're going deep. Killer.
Exactly.
Man,
I might throw in Phyllis Diller. You never know. Is it we go? We got all kind of references.
We got to say that for the end.
Yeah,
but we need a harder beat than that.
I was just going to say, the phony Dr. Dre beat was awesome, though.
It was, you know, it was
nice.
Very a la, you know, early Eminem, right? It was very.
Sounded then, like the beginning of Back That Ass Up, actually.
It did, a little bit, right?
I thought that's what we were doing. Working with Tom Hazard.
For the 9-9 in the 2000s.
Come on.
You already know.
Backed it up for that jam a couple times.
Sure.
Find that footage. We find out.
So, and then, because you also did Get Rich or Die Trying.
Yeah.
With 50 Cent.
Yeah.
Or Curtis Jackson.
He was 50
right?
at that time.
He was 50
it
at that
was
time.
50, though. Yeah. And it was cool. That was cool because that was a lot of the same team that produced 8 Mile. And, you know, I kept in touch with those guys, and we had such success with the first one. And they had something for me to do with the second one. And, you know, that director is a very, very, the most celebrated Irish director in the world, in film history, Jim Sheridan.
Mm.
Multi-Oscar winner, nominee, blah, 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 blah. And it was a great opportunity to work with him.
It's good.
Yeah. It's different, but it was very different. Very different. The tone of the set and just the situation was very different.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was interesting.
You've done a lot of great work. I would say your body of work is very versatile.
Thank God. Wait till you see this new one.
I can't wait. What are you doing? Are you singing?
I just saw it last night.
You twerking? What are you doing?
No, I'm not singing or twerking.
Dang, okay.
And I am also not related to Forrest. But, no, this is an action drama, and it really played, this film Homefront with Jason Statham, it really played at the premiere the other night, and it was great because the premiere was in Las Vegas, and as opposed to a Los Angeles premiere where it could be us in the studio for 2.5 hours at the end, people were like, ooh! That was, you guys, y'all did it. That was Oscar worthy.
Yeah.
These are regular people who were like shouting at the screen and, you know, it was really, really cool.
Yeah.
And it played really well.
Okay, we got to get back to that because that is so amazing and I want to spend some time on that. But I have to ask you about this movie. In 2004, you were in Shall We Dance.
Mm, yeah,
and Maya, the beautiful Maya, who I am such a big fan of, was your fiance in the movie and you had a dance scene.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was cool. It was crazy. It was very humbling because I got the job late. They'd already been filming or they had already prepped. Or I can't remember. Mm. I got the job late. I think somebody else actually got hurt or sick, the other man that was going to be in the film.
Okay.
And I was supposed to be doing another film. Well, when all of those things happened, it opened up the role, it opened up my schedule, blah, 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 connected the dots. Harvey Weinstein thought it was a good idea to get me in the movie. I was in the movie. It was a good time. Well, they had already been dancing for like 6-7 weeks and learning how to dance for that grand number at the end.
Yeah. Right.
I started, and I had about 4.5-5 weeks to learn how to do ballroom dancing and the whole nine.
Wow.
So it was really difficult. Maya got the job 3 days before we shot and picked the whole thing up in 3 days. And I was like, I thought I was making progress. It was very humbling. Right. But she was great. She's so light because she's an actual dancer, you know, other than being a singer. Yeah, she's so light on her toes. And it was great. It was great to feel up on Maya. Wasn't bad.
I know. Yeah. That's a pretty decent job. How would you rate your dance skills after that?
You know, it's ballroom dancing is a funny thing because you have to keep up with it. And I don't still go ballroom dancing on the weekend, so I could give you basic steps, but I'm not, you know, I'm not going to be able to recite the actual routine from the film 10 years ago.
Do you have two left feet, though, when it comes to any kind of dancing? Or can you dance? Or can you hold your own?
No, I can dance.
You can?
Yeah.
He's a black man.
And that doesn't mean nothing.
But he's from L.A. He's a black man from L.A.
So dancing is big in L.A. Yeah, I'm sure he can dance.
No, can you dance, Nick?
I have a strong two-step, and that's all I need.
That's all he needs.
That's all you
need. And I'm sure you can put variations in that two-step.
Exactly.
Stop
for a second. It could be a two-step cha-cha. It could be a two-step paso doble.
And especially,
you know, foxtrot two-step, whatever, however you want it.
But listen, if I'm at the club and I'm dancing with white girls, I just got to make sure that they stay on beat. That's the only thing that I'm worried about is them being on beat, and I'm cool.
Oh, my God.
There it is.
That's it.
So you got a strategy.
That makes you. That means you can dance, because you can.
Yeah. Dance.
Lord, I'm going to have to work with you. I'm going to have to work with you.
But you also did Miracle on St. Anna.
Yeah,
yes.
That's my personal favorite.
At St. Anna, with Spike Lee.
Yeah, yeah, and the monster cast.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks in that movie. So just what was that experience like, and what was it like working with Spike Lee?
Awesome on both fronts. The movie changed my life. I had to lose 70 pounds to get in that movie.
Wow.
Because I did a film before that called The Express, and it was a football film, and I played
so
a big, huge offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to play a soldier in this next film, and they filmed almost back-to-back. And I remember I got an alert on an email that Spike was casting a film, and I had read that book about 4 years earlier. And I remember when I read the book, I was like, this is literally my dream role. This is my ideal role.
Right. Wow.
And I called my agent. I was like, I just got to get in a room with Spike. And I knew Spike socially, not as well as I know him now, but I knew him socially. So she got me in a room with Spike, and I prepared and prepared. I did the role, and he was like, all right. Take off your shirt. All right, baby. Weight got me nervous. Nervous about the weight. I was like, don't worry about it. I got time. What time we got? I'm going to lose the weight. How you going to lose it? He said, I got it. Don't worry about it. So we had to go through this exercise regimen where literally I was going in. It was like The Biggest Loser. I would go in and get weighed every week.
Wow.
And they would report the results to Spike while he was in Italy casting the little boy and all this different stuff. So ended up losing, like, I think 54 pounds in 9 weeks or something like that. It was great.
Wow.
And then getting out there and shooting was just mind-blowing, just life-changing.
Yeah,
I'm a believer that the world would be a better place if Americans traveled more.
Right.
Especially outside of the United States. And this is one of the main reasons I feel that way. Because we end up shooting, like, 4 or 5 months there. And now I go to Europe every year and all this different stuff.
Good.
And there's just so many different ways of living, you know,
just
to get out of life, especially for us as black people. There's so much more.
Right.
No. So now, like, was there anything that you learned specifically from Spike working on that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think Spike's maybe his strongest attribute is in trusting his casting.
Mm. Mm.
And I'm not just saying that because I was in the movie, but once he hires the person, the work is on you.
Mm.
Right.
It's on you to create the work, and he's going to make you look great.
Mm.
So you handle your part, he'll handle his part. And if you don't come to play, he won't put the camera on you. It's amazing to see. I saw it where he would do a rehearsal, and it's just, okay, go. And you do the thing, and he'd walk up and be like, That's what you're going to do? All right, two cameras over here. You're like, well, wait, that was going to be...
Wow.
So, you know, he's a real expert at what he does, man. He's a great filmmaker, and yeah. and hopefully he has the opportunity to make more and more films because he has such a unique perspective on every piece of his that comes out.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Now, were there any similarities between you and your character, Private Sam Trek?
Just that he's a giant. He's a big, huge dude.
Chocolate giant.
Yeah. Chocolate, yeah. Yes.
He's a big, huge dude, and he has, he's from the South. My parents are Southern. And it's just, I don't know, there was a lot about that I really appreciated. Mm. Because the way that the approach that I took to it wasn't that he was dumb. He just had a different perspective on intelligence. He was he had a lot of common sense, just didn't have a lot of book sense.
Yeah. Right.
So it's I really loved that. I loved that film. I loved that role. Really wish it could have been seen by more people, you know?
Mm. Why do you say that that's your favorite out of all the work that you've done?
Just because of what I got to do, the challenge that was posed to me from physically to performance to the actual location of where we shot. I mean, the movie took me around the world. We shot in Italy. The film shot in Italy, New York, Louisiana, and the Bahamas.
Wow.
And I was in Louisiana and Italy. I ended up going to the Middle East because of that film to be like the ambassador of the film for the film festivals.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So I got to go to the United Arab Emirates, and I was in Abu Dhabi and Dubai and all this great stuff. Nice. And then, you know, just the film literally took me around the world. And just the all-encompassing nature of it, it was awesome.
Right.
Really.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a real, like, life-changing experience.
Now, there's been some talk about a lot of these racially charged films, or these racially themed films that have been coming out. And so, you know, because you've only done maybe like one or two, quote unquote, like racially themed films.
Yeah.
So what do you feel about, you know, just that title, or just calling films that are, you know, have a predominantly black cast, you know, like that they're like, oh, they're black movies or they're black films?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty accurate. If we have a film that has a black cast, it's a black movie. But I think that the conversation needs to be had, is it the same like people view people, where you have a drop, which means you're black? So is it that if you have a black writer, it's a black film? If you have a black director, is it a black film?
Mm.
If you know what I mean? And I think that I personally really enjoyed The Best Man Holiday, to the point where I had to tweet an endorsement to Malcolm Lee, and I hardly ever endorse other people's work, not even just because I like or don't like it, but just because they're the competition. But I think that that film was great. There's been a number of great films that I hate that it has to be so blanketed with the race element. Mm. I hate that people feel like they have to say, oh, it's good for a black movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Or it's a black film, so you should support it. I hate that element to it, because you should support what you like, and I actually believe you should support what's good.
Yeah.
And you know, everybody's taste is subjective to themselves.
Right, right.
But with that, there's a definite bias that occurs in Hollywood that takes place on almost every level. So hopefully, I believe that the generation younger than mine, because of hip-hop, I think this is one of the positive benefits of hip-hop, and I know it sounds like I'm going way off the deep end on this, with black films and hip-hop, but I think that because of the hip-hop generation and the fact that most of the people who have bought hip-hop from the 80s on have been non-black people and actually have brought that to be such a vibrant economy, I think because of that, the culture is getting a bit better accepted and known, so hopefully we can get our own people in positions that can greenlight films and television shows, and also some of people who may not be our own as far as our skin color goes, but they may have an affiliation and understanding with the culture based on their musical taste or their film taste or something to that effect, which then in turn will open the door more and more so we can just start having great films. And they don't have to be great black films.
Right.
Or it doesn't have to be one person that holds the whole race down. You know, it doesn't have to be, oh, Spike is our director. Tyler Perry is the guy. Right. Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? So it doesn't have to be that. You can just actually be a great director, actor, whatever. I mean, part of the reason you said, like, you talked about the racially themed films or charged films, however you want to put it. You know, I saw USA Today got in hot water for that.
Yeah.
Part of the reason I don't have a lot of that on my resume is because I make a conscious effort to have the diversity in my work,
right.
Because I don't. That's not my experience in life for it to only be one way,
right.
You know, and hopefully we can start stretching out in that sense. And as far as viewing and creating films.
Yeah.
Okay. And definitely going along with that, talking about the diversity that you have in your resume, you starred as Walter Simmons in CSI Miami. 63 episodes.
Great example of of diversity. And I'm not saying that for me. I'm just talking about in general. If you look at the cast and if you guys could have seen the cast, the crew, the writing staff, blah, 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 the editors, that I have nothing but kudos for the Jerry Bruckheimer Television Company because that was a diverse scenario that makes you feel very comfortable when you go to work. Mm-hmm. And the proof was in the pudding. You know, you could see it.
Yeah.
We had shows where sometimes this guy's the bad guy. Sometimes that woman's the good guy or the bad girl or the blah, blah, blah. There was never one, you know, lumping that went on.
Yeah.
Right. What was that experience like working on that show for that long?
Different. I mean, I had never done television for more than an episode or two prior to that.
Right.
And this thing, I mean, it was a real juggernaut. By the time I got on, they were already, you know, huge.
Yeah.
And it really just stretched out my reach as an artist because now I'm wherever I land, anywhere on the planet, everybody sees CSI Miami.
Right.
It's a giant, giant show, and it's just a real blessing to get to be a part of it.
Did you know you were going to be on that many episodes when you first started?
It was great because the way that they posed it to me was that they created a role for me and that it would to do a few of them and to report back whether or not I wanted to stay because they were happy to have me. And, you know, it's a real blessing because you don't get that kind of opportunity.
Right.
There was a lot of respect involved in creating the role for me. So I went and I did it, and I had a great time. I had a great time with the cast and the crew, and I was like, why would I not want to do this?
Yeah.
Especially in the midst of what we're talking about with the state of film and with all of the classification that has to go into a black film or or that. And part of that is the reason I took the role, to be honest, because I don't think that, you know, like Helen Mirren or you name Jodie Foster or anybody like that has to think when they take a role, I wonder how this is going to make white women overall look in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
And for me, I definitely keep that in mind when I choose things and when I do things. And I think about, okay, now what is this actually saying?
Right.
Is there a subversive message here that's actually negative? Is there some sort of agenda behind this portrayal or this imagery of some sort? And in this situation, I got to do a show where I got to play a cool authority figure that was also very intelligent and a scientist for a few years that people could look up to. I thought that was a great thing.
You did amazing. I loved you on that show. And I even loved you even more. I would say this is my personal favorite of your work. It's when you starred as Chris on The Love Section.
My man.
The Love Section is on Netflix if anybody wants to watch
it. Check out The Love Section.
It is such a cute movie.
Thank you.
Tell me about that, how you got involved with that project.
The producer of the film is a man named Lawrence Adiza, who was in, strange enough, I'll give you a long ways back. He started as an actor. He's from New York. And he actually met Mekhi Phifer on Clockers.
Mm.
Okay.
Now, after Mekhi and I shot 8 Mile, we continued to hang out and be friends. And he introduced me to some of his friends, one of which was L.A., to which me and him built a crazy friendship based around John Madden video games. And so he became a really good friend of myself, my brother, my family. So then when he was going to produce this film, he produced another film years ago that we did together called Grindin'. He asked me to do a little something in the film. I said, of course. Now in this one, he produced this film, and he told me he was producing it, and another buddy of ours who was a comedian who decided to get behind the camera named Ronnie Warner decided to direct. And that's how I got involved. They had a small thing for me to do in it. I'm always down for the homies, so we went and knocked it out. I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you liked it.
I love that movie. It's such a cute movie. Check it out. It's The Love Section on Netflix.
Yeah, Tevetta Sherwood. There's some really talented people in there.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah.
There you go. So now, anyone who looks at your IMDb page, right, can see that it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
And just
ridiculous.
The people that you have worked with, you know, the top actors and top actresses, the list goes on. Who has been your favorite person to work with?
Wow, that's a tough one.
Think wisely.
Yeah.
It's a tough one because I've really been fortunate to have the positive Hollywood experience where I don't run into a lot of jerks.
Mm.
I've actually forged some real friendships out of the you know, out of the film world and the stuff that I've done. I don't really have one person, but there's been some great highlights. I mean,
highlights go. Well, tell us the highlights.
One of my best friends in the world is Bobby Cannavale, who was in who was in Shall We Dance.
Okay.
And a lot of you guys will know him as Chip Rossetti from Boardwalk Empire.
Right.
Yeah. I've had a great time working with Michael Ealy. He's a great guy. I had a great time working with Tori Kittles on Get Rich or Die Trying and Miracle at St. Anna.
Yeah.
I had a great time working with Evan Jones, who was Cheddar Bob in 8 Mile. And then he did my small independent film together. And then we did Lucky You, a poker film together. So there's a long list. I have a lot of friends that I actually still keep in contact with from the movies, from the directors of the films to the actual actors of the films. Mm-hmm. And it's been... It's crazy. I've had a great run. I really have.
You have, yeah.
Okay. So now, you know, the whole Hollywood.
You know. Well, you just changed your tone. I need to take a sip of water to figure out where you're going with this.
The whole Hollywood lifestyle, right? And so, you know, being an Angeleno, right? So, you know, people, there's a lot of transplants that come out. You know, everyone, you know, has wishful thinking of being an actor. And so they're waiters or waitresses and this and that. But, you know, they're actors. And so there's a big difference between people who wait tables and act versus people who act and have, like, not a legitimate, but have a substantial career and are really actively pursuing it. So how have you, you know, had your career, like, be substantial and be, you know, a career to where you're working constantly?
Oh, man, it's just a direct blessing from God. There's no other way about it. There's a lot of other talented people out there. There's a lot of people who can get down if they got the opportunity. But Hollywood is a very closed place.
It's true.
And it's a very, as creative as it can be as rigid as it can be.
Right.
And I was fortunate enough for some very influential and important people to recognize my talent and enjoy my presence. And those people tell other influential people because they seem to run in the same circles. And then they all want me in front of their camera, which, thank God, it's worked out in my favor, you know. I think that everybody starts at one point or another, if you're not tied in the industry, you start as that actor slash, as you call it, you know, actor right. slash waiter slash car mechanic slash part-time weed dealer, whatever right. it is that you do.
Right.
Medicinal, of course. But I think that to create your living off of this is just a wonderful thing. There's some very interesting downsides to it, but the positives way, way outweigh it.
What are some downsides?
You know, just the political game that goes along with being in the Hollywood system. Mm-hmm. That's one of the downsides. It doesn't always allow for the most creativity. But, you know, even that is what the alternate is nowhere near as positive as the positives are. The upsides, you could write an almanac about the upsides because there's so much experience and exposure and travel and, you know, stuff really can change your life. It can really change your life in a lot of good ways if you allow it to. And if you hustle for it.
Mm. Has fame been negative for you in any way? Like, you can't go to the store
just,
in your house
I was just about
shoes.
To say, you can, though. You can go to what the cool part about it is actually you can. Because the only thing that you have to do is just deal with the people who are going to ask you about why you're in your house shoes at the store.
Right.
That's what the whole thing is. But there's nobody to stop you. It's not like your boss is going to see you at the store in your house shoes and be like, oh, my goodness, we need to write Omar off. I saw him at Vons in some slippers. It is never going to happen like that. So that part is actually – it's a trip. If there's a negative to it, it's just that I receive a lot of love and attention that anonymity has been lost and worldwide. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just something you have to prepare for. It's something you're actually working for, strangely enough, as an actor. Because if nobody knows who you are, chances are you aren't in business.
Right.
But if when people start knowing you and they're willing to interrupt you, your meal, or you taking a dump in a public place, you've actually made it. It's awesome.
That's awesome. We all aspire for that.
This is what I'm saying.
Bother me while I'm on the toilet.
That's what it is. You got to keep things in perspective.
Right. So I know you probably have a lot of them, but who are some of your favorite directors that you've worked with?
Spike, Curtis Hanson, who directed 8 Mile, Gary Fleeter, who directed The Express and this film Homefront that's about to come out.
Okay.
I've really been fortunate, man. I've worked with some really, really high-end, talented, you know, Academy Award-winning and nominated directors and writers and the whole nine.
Okay. Yeah. So you mentioned Homefront, which is coming out November 27th.
November 27th.
Yeah. It is November 27th. And Jason Statham's in it, James Franco, Winona Ryder. How did you get involved with this?
Through that director, through Gary Fleeter.
Okay.
Actually, we made the film The Express together in 2007, I want to say we shot it.
Yeah.
And we kept in contact, and I was introduced to him by Evan Jones, who is the guy that played Cheddar Bob, okay, and several other roles since then, but everybody knows him from Cheddar Bob. And we made that film, and we kept in contact, and this thing came to him because it was supposed to be a film that Sylvester Stallone wrote for himself.
Okay.
But I guess that by the time he got around to it and the Expendables franchise had blown up and all this other stuff, so he decided that he wanted to pass it on because he didn't have time or he felt like it was, you know, somebody else's rodeo. Mm. And he kind of gifted it to Jason Statham because nice. Jason is in his camp from the Expendables and whatnot. Yeah. And so that kind of made the whole dynamic of the film younger.
Okay.
So it opened up one of the roles that was actually written for like a middle-aged black man to be written then for me.
Mm.
And so the director called me and said, hey, I'm doing this new movie. I don't know if you heard about it, but I want you to be in it. And I read it, and I was like, cool, I think there's something I can do here. I think I can make this interesting. And we went down to Louisiana and shot it in New Orleans, and I just saw it the other night, and I really enjoy the film. If I was a 14-year-old, this would be my favorite. I would watch this film, like, 100 times.
So wow. Tell us about Homefront. What is it about, and who do you play, and what's your role like?
The film is about an undercover DEA agent that loses his wife, has lost his wife, and moves out to the country to where she grew up to raise his daughter as a single dad.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one of those guys that good luck just can't seem to find him.
Right.
So he then, in turn, his cover gets blown by a really bad man that's played by James Franco.
Okay.
And I am the only person in this new town that plays his friend. I'm the only person in the town that's kind of accepting to him. Everyone else is... You know, it's a small town, and people are judging of him, and he's got an accent, and so people don't necessarily trust him, and blah, yeah. blah, blah. And it really unfolds to be a really cool action, drug, just interesting story. Really good movie. Okay. It's a fun movie. It's like a popcorn movie that also has some really great performances.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I promise you guys. Yeah, good. Y'all don't like it, I give you your dough back. This was a good movie. I really
Well, hold
it.
On. What'd you say? Exactly. Go ahead and say it again. Go ahead and say it again.
Sorry, sister. I can slide you a dub if you need it, if it's like that.
Go ahead. You heard it here.
I'm just saying.
You know what it almost sounds like? Because if Sylvester Stallone would have did the movie, you know, could have been Forrest Whitaker in that role. So you almost took the role
from
you did.
I didn't even think about that.
I'm right. just saying.
Wow. You know? Wow. You just opened my eyes here.
Right? So.
And you're going to blow my cover. I'm going to take my mask off and I'm actually Forrest Whitaker.
It is my, So now you also have a short film coming out called Meat and Potatoes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
according to IMDb, this film is about 14 minutes long.
It's about what?
It's about 14 minutes long.
Oh, 14 minutes long. I thought you said 14 men's law. I was like, wow, what is 14 men's law? I didn't sign up for that. Yeah, no, it's a short film that we made that a friend of mine that I worked with before asked me to come do something on. It's a very, very interesting film. It's about a man on death row who propositions the chef who's there to give him his last meal to kill him. With the meal instead of being killed by the actual needle.
Okay.
And so it's about a lot of the moral argument of the death penalty and whether or not is the death penalty just does some killing someone actually at times could it be something that's justifiable?
Mm.
You know, all of these kind of questions. And they made the short film. I haven't got to see it yet, and they're hoping to parlay that into a feature. But shooting it was really cool because, you know, we shot in an actual prison and it was very easy to get into character because that man is a tight squeeze.
And who do you play in that movie?
I play the... I'm sorry. Great question. I'm sorry. I play the death row inmate.
Wow.
I play the death row inmate who's propositions the chef as to who's Kevin Chamberlain as to whether or not to take me out of my misery before they can get the satisfaction of it. And you'll see there's some very interesting dynamics about whether or not this character has been actually justly convicted, or whether or not he was actually innocent, or it's interesting stuff.
Wow, I want to watch this for it to be 14
movie.
Minutes.
Yeah, I know.
Wow,
it's compacted in 14 minutes.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a really good picture. I have confidence in the whole team that made it.
Where can people find that? Will it be online? Or
you know what? I think they're going to run it through the festivals. Okay. So I think you'll have to keep an eye out at whatever your local film festival is. Keep an eye there, and you'll be able to find it. Look for Meat and Potatoes. It's a cool, really cool name.
Meat and Potatoes.
It is.
There you go. And then because you also did this half-hour drama for HBO, or dramedy, right, for HBO with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
We're doing it in January.
Gotcha.
We're doing
it
in January.
Is it called Ballers? Because there's been some.
Right now so it's called Ballers. That's a working title. I don't know if it's going to, you know, remain Ballers when it hits the air. But it's a film about retired and current NFL stars and that wild lifestyle that I don't know how many professional athletes you guys know, but it's this and stuff happens
they
in their lives.
The life.
It's a pretty cool, accurate portrayal because they have a lot of insight, you know, a lot of inside information. So this is my baby, is going to be on HBO. I'm really, really excited for it. It's another thing that was written for me.
Okay.
Thank God. And, you know, it's from the producers of Entourage, from Mark Wahlberg.
So does it have that feel a little bit?
I don't think that's what they're going for. I mean, I think they're going for that feel in the sense that it's an ensemble.
Mm.
Okay.
But I don't think we're going to – it doesn't follow one guy. I think that it's going to not be so much about this one guy and his friends, whereas it's going to be about these individuals and, you know, whatever thing that they're going through at the time, about marriage, about salary, about pain while you play and after you play. All of the things that are ripped from the headlines now, you know what I mean? Wow. All the stuff about the NFL – that's constantly in the headlines now is what we're going to cover.
And who do you play?
I play a character named Charles.
Charles.
Who's the moral center of the show. He's married to his high school sweetheart. So I can't give you much more than that because they might cut me.
We don't want to do this. We don't want to lose
your job. Because you're the moral center of the show, so that's good.
At this point, it's lofty.
Change.
You never know. That's the kind of thing. It's funny. You can go from hero to goat real quick.
That's true.
Ask any married man.
So you've written, directed, and I guess produced the movie Gordon Glass.
Yeah.
Are you going to do more things behind the scenes, behind the camera?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to have the freedom to create my own stuff. Thankfully, I've been in demand, so I haven't had a lot of time to do that. But I think as things continue to shake out and as technology keeps advancing, because now you can get the quality. If I have any regrets about Gordon Glass, it's that now I could shoot on my phone a film with higher resolution and quality than what we shot on for Gordon Glass.
Right. Yeah.
And it's crazy how times have changed like that.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing in the sense that if you're an independent filmmaker, an independent artist of any sort, technology is at the point now where nobody can stop you from getting your art out.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, if you go hustle up a couple dollars, you can get the equipment that you need to produce something.
Right. Yeah.
And for me, I'm planning on doing that with all of those people that I named that I loved working with from, you know, everybody from Benicio Del Toro to Joy Bryant to whoever.
Yeah.
Because this is the same talent that's going to be there, whether or not the studio is cutting the check or whether I'm cutting it, you know?
Right. Don't worry, I'm available if you have a role that's like, would you like some cheese with that?
It's funny. That was the exact reading I was going to ask you to do. I have it in my phone. He knows. I told him when I first came in.
Oh, my time has come.
That's what it is. So it is.
But you have to keep the voice exactly
the same.
That's what it is. So let's hear it again.
Would you like some cheese with that?
See, that was great. That was great.
Yes.
So I'll, you know, we'll be in contact. So maybe you could put together a demo reel of that and your rap.
And then I might just make it into your next film.
No, but you would have a demo reel together of your rap and that line.
Oh my, you're so kind. I love it.
Cold word out here in Hollywood.
You'll see this wool coat.
Yeah,
I got some leather gloves in the car. I tell you, my pimp hand's strong.
You so funny.
Get the baby powder ready.
So right.
Hilarious.
What has been your biggest challenge in Hollywood?
You know, just overcoming being put in a box.
Mm.
Because there's the potential to say, oh, that's the big guy, he's the bodyguard. Oh, that's the guy from the lab from CSI, he can only play a scientist.
Mm.
That's, you know, whatever it is. And so that's been the biggest challenge, is just to make sure that I can find and get in front of the right people for those roles that I find interesting,
right,
that I also think are, you know, a very solid portrayal of the tapestry of my experience as a person that I try to translate as an artist.
Good. Now, are there any roles that you want to tackle in the future?
You know what? I don't have anything specific in mind. There was once I had a really good time with Spike, and I were talking about it'd be great to lose some more weight and do Joe Louis.
Oh,
wow.
And there was a
you
trippy
do
thing.
Look like him.
It was a trippy thing. There was a picture of me when we were at the boot camp that we had to do for Miracle of St. Anna's. I was standing next to a picture. I couldn't even see it, but I had more hair, and I mean, I looked a lot like the guy. It looked like he could have been like related
That's
to my
crazy.
Mom,
right?
Wow.
And he's one of the, I think, the most fascinating characters in American history,
right?
And that would be really cool if there was a way to put that together.
Wow, you do look like I'm like seeing it right now.
I just need more
put
more
that
hair.
On me,
see? Wow.
Putting that on you, that, putting that blessing your way.
You see that? There it is.
I do.
That's how I would like some
it's
more
still
cheese.
Probably not gonna get you the part in the movie.
That was, you know.
Who else can say, would you like some cheese with that better than me?
Oh, see? No, that was more aggression. That was
would you like some cheese with that?
Yes, see? Even our producer, Steven.
Even the pedophile that jumped on the speaker jumped on. That was
that's
was a little scary, actually.
That's funny.
I'm going to have to put him on the Megan's Law list.
That's
I don't
so
know
funny.
About...
Okay. So,
oh my god,
you are so funny. You should have you ever thought about doing comedy?
I have, but I feel like it's just too revealing. I studied a lot of the stand-up artists, and you know, for the people who are most effective and the people that I find the funniest, I feel like it's a very personal experience,
right?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think I want to share that much with the world.
Okay,
maybe some point, but at this point, I don't think so. You know, it seems like, to my experience, when people do comedy, it's not like they're playing a role. They're
right.
They're bearing their themselves.
Soul, yeah.
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 And I like to affect change via the work that I get to do. You know, it's like it's a trip. I had some very interesting conversation. I had an interesting conversation with Nate Parker about that. He's a very funny guy as well.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very. It's amazing how many of the dramatic actors are really funny people.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, David Caruso from ZSI Miami is one of the funniest people you will ever meet.
Right.
Nobody knows it because he's very serious on the show.
There you go.
But in real life, David, man, that dude is funny. Very wry New Yorker with a great, hilarious sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There you go.
Are there, if you look back over your career so thus far, what would you say are some of the highlights?
Working in general is a highlight in Hollywood. It's hard.
Right.
But if I had to just, you know, put together a reel, it would be for sure landing the gig in 8 Mile.
Okay.
For sure getting to work with some real heavyweights in Shall We Dance. Doing Gordon Glass because of what that did for me as an artist, you know, trying to be an independent artist. Doing a film that not a lot of people saw called Things We Lost in the Fire.
Oh, yeah.
Benicio Del Toro and Halle Berry. Because that I learned a lot working with some real serious heavy hitters. It's a great director on that too, Susanna Beer. She's from Denmark, I do believe. And then easing into Miracle at St. Anna and CSI. That's a super, you know, to this point, those are the highlights. And this film Homefront, I'm telling you guys, wait till you see it. I'm in there breaking people down. You get to see me with the Bruce Lee. With the
wow.
You never know. I mean, that's I might hot. Even bust out in the river dance for you.
Hey.
Wow.
So but basically no, everything on
no,
your resume.
No, not everything. But there's been something positive to draw from every experience.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's been the cool part.
Has there been anything that you look back and you're like, why did I do that?
No, because anything that I look back on and say, why did I do it? It's usually a very simple reason why I did it. Like,
okay.
I had free time or I was broke.
Okay.
So there's usually a clear reason why I do stuff. You know,
okay.
I try to choose things that either I want to work with the person or I want to work in this location. I love the script or I need to pay a bill.
Mm.
You know what I mean? There's and I've been blessed because I don't have a lot of the need to pay the bills on my on my resume.
That's good.
That's a blessing.
That's good. So do you have any hobbies? Because earlier you said that you have, like, some free time, but you're still busy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, traveling is my hobby, really. I travel a lot, and then I try to fill in my time seeing different parts of the world. I mean, I really have the travel bug bad.
Mm.
I go all over the world, and I see stuff, and I'm just amazed at how many different ways there are to live a good, full life. You know, and it's a trip. Culture is a wonderful thing. And for us as black people, we have such a wonderful culture that the world has always been interested in.
Yeah.
And so to go out and, you know, really vibe with other people in the world and even other parts of the country and get to know people. It's a different cuisine, all that. It's really good. But I really, you know, I love to travel. I love sports.
Good.
And those are my hobbies.
More What's your favorite country?
The United States is my favorite country, actually, but followed closely by Canada. Canada is the, other than the United States, is the best country on the planet. And the reason I really even balked to just call them all out number one is because of the weather, because it's a cold weather place,
right,
by and large. But Canada's a great country.
Okay.
But I'm a big fan of France. I had a blast in Turkey, had a great time in Israel.
Wow.
I feel like people sleep on the Middle East because here we get so much convoluted news and it's all violence, blah, blah, blah. There's some good living to do in the Middle East.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I had a great time in Brazil. I had a blast in Brazil. I just got back from Jamaica for the first time, and I'm feeling idy about that. There's something great almost everywhere, I do believe. Mm-hmm. Just about everywhere that I've been, I've had an experience that's been good. Like, wow.
That's good. So now, for young actors or, you know, people who are thinking about getting into the business, what's probably the best advice you can give them?
Create your opportunities. I mean, at this point, you know, it's wide open for people. And if you can create something that's interesting, you never know who's going to see it. So you can then in turn create opportunity out of just creating stuff. Right. And I don't think at any other point in history it's been that way. You can create stuff now.
Yeah.
And you can create it. There's cheap ways to create it from your phone to distribute it on the internet. You know, there's grassroots ways of getting your stuff out there. So I would just say just don't limit yourself by what's available by the traditional routes. Because if I lined up 10, you know, recognizable actors and directors, none of them would have the same story about the route that they got to success.
Yeah.
It's a trip like that.
Yeah. And so
persevere, you know. It's all the no's are whatever. You only need one person to say yes.
Right. That's true. Now, what do you want your legacy to be?
Oh, wow, that's a tough one. Jeez, I don't know. I want to be viewed as somebody who was for the positive progression of just humanity in general.
Hmm.
And it seems as though at this point, the way that I can get that across is through the arts. So I just want to be somebody who people say, wow, that guy did more good than harm. And he actually did. He tried to help advance things. I'm really very interested in progress and, you know, diversity and the unity of people because we're all interdependent. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there's a handful of people and forces that divide us, I think.
Right.
But we're all interdependent. And the sooner that we recognize that interdependence and deal with other people as though we know them, even if we don't know them, the sooner we can get to a more harmonious place.
Right.
It sounds kind of like a, you know, a lofty goal, but it's possible.
Yeah.
So I know you've got a lot of female fans around the world. Are you dating anybody?
I do.
You do?
Well, it's funny. I have a lot of 53,000 men who hit me on Twitter every day.
There's some women in there somewhere. Some of them might actually be women. Who knows? So, are you dating anybody in particular?
Yeah, I have a private squeeze that shall remain nameless.
A private squeeze.
Yeah.
A private squeeze. All right, lady. Sorry, I tried to help you out on Twitter.
It was.
We always ask that.
I'm good to throw you a hug, though. Strangely enough, you don't always ask that. Interestingly enough, but I'm glad you asked it.
Oh, I always ask it on the show. Let me not say we.
No. I didn't mean y'all. It's my first time being on BHL.
Yes, but I'm saying
we as women. And strangely enough, I don't think we do. Always.
What is
want
important?
To know if a man has
true.
A woman.
It's like sometimes they don't care.
They don't.
You know.
That's called trifling.
They just push up. I mean, you know, it's Hollywood.
I'm just talking about in the world, actually. I'm not just talking about in Hollywood. I'm just talking about in general.
What's important in a mate for you?
That she's a woman. that she is a she is the top priority, actually. And then after that, we can figure things out.
What about personality-wise?
It's the most important personality. I like people who have big personalities like me. I like characters. I like robust people who are full of life, you know.
Okay.
I'm not into shy and demure. You know, I like loud people who laugh loud and, you know, eat a lot. Like, you know, I like people who are really interested in living.
Right.
You know, and letting it all hang out.
Right. Wow. Sounds pretty dope.
There you go. All right. So, Omar, do you have anything else that you want to plug besides the home front that's Thanksgiving is when it comes out?
Yeah. Right? No, that's the number one priority right now. And especially now that I've seen the film, and it's not just lip service. A lot of the times when you talk to actors, they're just telling you it's a good film because that's their job.
Yeah.
But I've actually seen the film, and it's awesome.
Right.
And the film is actually really, really good. And, you know, I think people have come to count on me when they're spending their money because it's expensive to go to the movies now. Mm. And so, you know, if you can take your girl out to the movies and you're working on the minimum wage job, you can't afford the movie to be whack.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't plan to be in any bad ones. So this is a good movie.
There you go.
That's my seal of approval.
And right. Where can your fans find you online?
Twitter is probably the best place. It's at Omar Miller. It goes right to my phone. It's like you have my phone number.
For all of you crazy stalkers out there. Almost.
Yeah. Hit them on Twitter. And Megan, where can people find you?
As always, hit me up on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Meg Scoop, like Scoop of Ice Cream. Don't forget to check out Homefront on November 27th. We can see our favorite person, Omar Miller, because he's so talented.
Favorite person? Wow. You're and right. Where can we find you on the internet?
All over the internet at The Nick Perdue. That's it. Yeah.
Pretty simple.
Okay.
Thank you, man. Thank you for coming in.
Yes.
I'm excited. I'm excited for the movie.
Wait till you see it. You guys hit me up afterwards.
I will. I will tweet it and I'll be like, hey.
She will too. And even if she did like it, she's going to want her $20.
I am. And I'm going to ask you too. Don't worry. Give me my money back.
Exactly. And I'm going to give you another line about the cheese.
Yes.
And thank you guys for watching. This has been another episode of Black Hollywood Live. Next.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Dario Kristen, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network. If you have questions or comments, tweet us at BHL Online or email us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. For more exclusive content, visit blackhollywoodlive.com. This has been a presentation of the Black Hollywood Live Network.
For once, Hollywood redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.